The Italian Wine Podcast is the community-driven platform for Italian wine geeks around the world. Support the show by donating at italianwinepodcast.com. Donate 5 or more euros and we'll send you a copy of our latest book, My Italian Grape Geek Journal, absolutely free. To get your free copy of My Italian Grape Geek Journal, click support us at italianwinepodcast.com or wherever you get your pods. Grazie mille.
Benvenuti! Welcome to the next generation with me, your host, Giulia Stocchetti. Join me as I take you on a journey to discover young stars of the Italian food and wine world. Pronti? Andiamo!
Hello, this is Giulia from the Italian Wine Podcast team. And today there's this special edition dedicated to the Via Gita Scolastica in Marche Wine Region. For who doesn't know, Marche is located in central Italy, and it's an amazing region to visit for the outstanding wines and the really delicious traditional food. But oh my God, the people there are so nice and so friendly. We had such a great welcome when we were there because, yes, I was there too. I was part of the staff. Today's guest, Larissa Lorenz, an Italian wine ambassador, is going to recap the experience we had in Le Marche. So let me tell you something about this amazing woman. She is American, but she lives actually in Mexico City. And I can say that she moved there for love because she lives there with her family. And she's also a businesswoman because she's the co-founder of Vinos Enteros, a wine importing and distributing company based in Mexico City. And they mostly work with artisanal wineries. And I would say most of their portfolio is made up of organic wines. And they also have some biodynamic wines. So it's quite interesting to look at. That said, I would say, hi, Larissa.
Hi, Giulia. Thank you so much for that introduction.
Oh my God, my pleasure. I'm so glad to have you here. And it's like, you know, living again the Marche experience. That was great. I was so happy to be part of this stuff. So, but let me ask you something because I'm pretty curious about that. Like, was it your first time in Le Marche?
It was. It was my first time visiting Le Marche. And I remember that something that stood out to me just amongst the group of people on the trip was that it was everyone's first time in Le Marche, with the exception of Stevie Kim. So I think in general, you know, a wine region that a lot of us had curiosity about, but hadn't had a chance to visit before.
Oh, wow. And so what brought you there? Like the curiosity to visit a new region?
Definitely that was a part of it. I had read about Le Marche, had tried some wines from there before, hadn't had a chance to visit it. And then I would say beyond that, I really love Verdicchio. I've had the opportunity to taste Verdicchio from different parts of Italy. We actually work with a producer from Lugana, and I love it. So I thought it would be a fantastic opportunity to get to try so many different expressions from what is ostensibly probably the most important region for Verdicchio production in Italy.
Well, I definitely think so, because for those who don't know, Verdicchio is the same as Turbiana, so the grape variety they used to make, Lugana on Lake Garda. So yeah, for Verdicchio, Marche is the benchmark region, I would say. What surprised you the most?
A lot. I found that I came away from the trip with very different impressions than what I had anticipated. I think that, to be concise about it, probably the most important takeaway for me was really the prevailing importance of winemaking techniques vis-a-vis territories. So I think that, you know, in retrospect, it's not particularly surprising, because particularly when we talk about Castelli di Jesi, we're talking about a really, really big region with lots of different microclimates, kind of important distinctions from the various sub-appellations to others. On balance, even when we were tasting within a specific sub-appellation, there was so much variation. So I think it was really the impression that winemaking is really differentiating the various different wines. And it's the fingerprints of the winemakers more so than the region on the wines that really stood out to me.
Wow, that's really, really interesting. But you think that there's still wines that are related to the winemaking traditions of the region, or you find also a lot of experimentations in like new styles?
I think that the answer is that yes, of course, there are some regional tendencies that you see and some certain, you know, similarities for sure. So to be specific, I think that Matelica was one of the regions where we saw sort of the most uniformity in terms of wines that generally speaking were a little bit fresher, brighter, leaner, less of a tendency to experiment with barrique, with later harvest, with botrytis, blending with pasito, things like that. So certainly there were some regional similarities that came out. But there is a lot of experimentation. There is a lot of sort of technical winemaking that we also saw, which was really, really interesting. And I would say that even thinking about the sort of technical winemaking sphere, there also were tendencies that came out in some of the different sub-appellations.
And so what was your favorite style?
My palate definitely tends more towards wines that I would say are less technical, more focused on kind of a pure expression of the fruit and the territory. And so I definitely found regions, or rather wines from every single region that we visited, that absolutely sort of expressed that. But again, if I'm to talk about, you know, kind of specific region in broad strokes or specific couple of regions, I would say that my favorites were probably Matelica for Verdicchio. And I also loved our visit to Lacrima di Moro di Alba, which was just so, so fascinating. I had never had the grape of Lacrima before. And although I love Verdicchio and adore white wine, it was also fun to have a bit of a change of pace and taste some red wine from Le Marche.
It sounds about right, because they're not making just white wines out of Verdicchio in the market, but they're making also some reds like Lacrima di Moro d'Alba. That's actually, I can say, is pretty unknown also in Italy as a red wine. It's not among the most famous. I think it's most known Rosso Conero from the region as a red wine among wine lovers throughout Italy. Let's talk about your Lacrima di Moro d'Alba experience. How was that?
It was great. So we spent the afternoon at a stunning estate by the name of Filo di Vino. If my notes serve me correctly, we tasted 38 wines in that tasting. So it was sort of true to form. It was pretty prolific.
Yeah, it was like a deep dive into the Lacrima.
It was. And it was so great because, just as you said, these are wines that you don't really see internationally very much, particularly not in Mexico. And it was actually the first time that I had had the Lacrima grape. So for me, it was really just kind of rich education. Tasted really widely. I think we tasted wines from approximately 10 producers that day. So we had an opportunity to taste a couple of wines from each producer, which was really great. Either tasting different crew from the same producer, sometimes tasting different vintages. I am just looking over my notes a bit more. In general, I found the wines were really charming. So the region is quite close to the sea. These aren't wines that are overly tannic, overly austere. They're pretty accessible. I remember one or two of the wines that we tasted was actually served a little bit chilled in temp, and that was actually lovely. So these are wines that taste like fruit for the most part, and I found them to be really, really charming. Much more of a tendency to use steel or cement versus new oak. Again, it was a really nice change of pace, and I thought that the wines were pretty delicious.
Wow, that's great. I mean, actually it was an amazing experience for the whole group, I guess, because as you said, it was the first time for all of you. And so now we're going to have more Italian wine ambassadors talking about Verdicchio, Lacrima di Morro d'Alba, Rosso Conero, and all the wines we had there. That's great, especially because when you go actually where they make the wines and you meet the producers, you leave the area, everything has another taste after that. And you actually really understand, as you say, that wine is a cultural product. Let me just ask you, how many wines did we taste during the gita? Because I remember there were a lot, like 10 producers from Lacrima di Morro d'Alba, and I can't count the Verdicchio dei Castelli di Jesi, the Verdicchio di Matelica, so many wines.
Yeah, we had a lot of wines. So our exposure to the wines was kind of through two different channels. So channel one would be sitting down and doing formal guided tastings, which were led by the producers. And we had 4 days of those tastings. In some instances, we had one tasting a day. Some instances, we had two. So through those tastings, we had about 150 wines, approximately. But in addition to those formal guided tastings, we also had the opportunity to taste again with producers during lunches and dinners. And sometimes through the second channel, we had historic vintages, we had large formats. And so if you think about all of the additional wines that we tried through these lunches and dinners, I would say we're talking about minimum another 50 wines over the course of the 4 days, you know, at least 200 wines we tried during the course of the gita.
So now you should all recognize Verdicchio and wines from Le Marche during blind tastings.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Don't forget to visit our YouTube channel, Mama Jumbo Shrimp, for fascinating videos covering Stevie Kim and her travels across Italy and beyond, meeting winemakers, eating local food, and taking in the scenery. Now back to the show.
How does the region look like? I mean, in terms of like history and geography, how's Le Marche?
One thing that I really loved about this trip was that such a brilliant job was done in terms of blending formal tastings with the broader history and culture of the region. For a complete nerd like me, that was just amazing. And as I always say, wine is a cultural product. And I know you mentioned that earlier. So having a handle on the broader context is really, really important for understanding the wine. In terms of Le Marche, I think that the first thing to talk about is kind of where it sits geographically. You mentioned that it is in central Italy. It is in the central eastern part of the country. And so on one side, on the eastern side, it's the seaboard, it's the Adriatic Sea. And then on the western side of Le Marche, you have the Apennine Mountains. And they kind of descend into these rolling hills that become closer and closer to sea level as you travel eastward toward the sea. It is a region with a lot of rivers. I believe that there were 8 rivers, if I'm not mistaken, in the region. And those tend to, generally speaking, kind of demarcate the various different DOCs and DOCGs. One of the things that we saw throughout the course of our trip was this branding around what they call the Magnificent 16. And that's because there are 15 different DOCs and 1 IGT in Le Marche. So there's just a lot of variation, really, in terms of the geography, the microclimates, the soil, etc. And you see that in terms of the various denominations. Let's see, what else is key to talk about? I think something for me that was really interesting that I hadn't known before was that Le Marche, or at least parts of Le Marche, most notably, you know, right along the sea, were actually part of Magna Grecia. So, you know, Greek speaking, settled by Greek settlers from as early as the 8th century BC. So, you know, when you think about Magna Grecia, typically you're thinking about the south of Italy, Sicily, Campania. Even parts of Le Marche were included in that. We talked about how Verdicchio, it's really found an important home in Le Marche, but it's believed to have originated in northern Italy, in Lombardia and the Veneto, where it's called, as you mentioned, either Turbiana or Trebbiano di Lugana. It's been produced for quite a long time, probably about, you know, somewhere between 500 to 800 years in Le Marche, but it was actually brought from the north to central Italy by the Lombards. Those were a couple of highlights in terms of things that stood out to me, but really the whole trip was just kind of interspersed with all of these great historical anthropological lessons. So really, really enjoyed that.
Yeah, we mixed wine with cultural stuff, and actually there's quite a lot of history in Le Marche, so it was cool. It was also international in ancient times, basically, starting from Magna Grecia and then becoming part of Italy. You mentioned also the production of Trebbiano di Lugana, right? What do you think is the most different thing between the Trebbiano di Lugana and Verdicchio?
That's such a great question, and it's something that I've given a lot of thought to, because I think that my perspective is kind of an unusual one, given that Verdicchio is more widely known from Le Marche, but the expression that I'm more familiar with, just by virtue of my importation portfolio, is that of Lugana. And so in Lugana, Verdicchio Trebbiano tends to have a pretty lean expression. So typically the vineyards are quite close to Lake Garda, which is a really, really big lake in Italy. So extremely important in terms of having a tempering effect on the weather, lake breezes, definitely a cooler region of Italy, not one with, you know, particularly high altitude. We're talking about very close to sea level. But by virtue of the soil, the wines tend to be very kind of fresh, mineral driven. They're not typically playing around with a later harvest, unless the idea is to make kind of a sweeter dessert wine with residual sugar. Much more of a tendency to use stainless steel or cement for fermentation. And what I found with the Verdicchio from Lugana is that, particularly as they evolve in bottle, they start to develop some of the same kind of classic petrol notes that you expect of an aged German Riesling, for instance. That's kind of what I had in mind as a key reference point when I went to Le Marche. In Le Marche, again, we saw just such a wide breadth of expressions of Verdicchio. But by and large, if I'm to generalize, I would say the Verdicchio that we saw in Le Marche definitely seem to be a warmer weather Verdicchio. So, you know, richer, fuller, more luscious. There was a very wide variety of winemaking styles. So we had, you know, bone dry to, you know, wines that were definitely a bit more viscous with some residual sugar, playing around with late harvest, also having some botrytized wines, also some pasito. So, you know, when you blend in the winemaking, you start to see a whole lot of variation. But just in general, I think climatically, really strong differences. Elevation actually was higher for the most part in Le Marche, whether we're talking about Jesi or Matelica. But again, I found the wines to, generally speaking, be richer, less lean, and kind of less driven by the minerality and acidity that I see in Lugana, and much more by kind of this like beautiful full fruit. So wildly different. And then in terms of that kind of petrol nose that I found in Lugana, I didn't see that at all, actually, in Le Marche.
Are you saying that they are both age-worthy wines, or do you think that one is more age-worthy than the other?
I think that they're absolutely both age-worthy wines. So we had the opportunity to taste wine going back to 10. I think in one case, we had a wine that was 13 years old, if I'm not mistaken, from Le Marche. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful age-worthy wines without question. In Lugana, I have had fewer older vintage wines, but those that I have had, I think, are evolving beautifully and have the potential to really improve in bottle. In both regions, there is definitely, I would say, a strong push to pay very close attention to parcels, to be holding back, to start building libraries. So I think it's something that both regions are working towards in terms of knowing that they're producing ageable white wines and wanting to be able to have a supply that they can actually sell to the market.
That's fantastic, because usually white wines are not capable of long aging. I mean, there are just few examples, and Verdicchio is among those examples. So I think that's great. During Le Marche experience, we had also some typical food, right?
We did. We had beautiful food. We had the most generous hosts. I don't think anyone went hungry on the trip. So you mentioned at the beginning that the food was traditional, right? Like, we had so many expressions of local cheeses, seasonal autumnal vegetables, local nuts. I remember having one day this really beautiful sort of like timbale of pistachio that was just so gorgeous. We had fresh pastas. We had beautiful desserts, truffles.
Oh my God. Do you remember the offals?
Yes, I remember that particular lunch that you're talking about, Julia, had been baked into the itinerary as a light lunch. It was hysterical because we sat down at the table and everybody first had a massive plate of charcuterie and cheeses served. And then you're right, we had offal, we had, I think, grilled meat, we had just kind of course after course after course.
It's a lunch for people like working 24 hours a day in the countryside, I don't know, moving big rocks from one side to another, because it was really too much food.
It was beautiful. And so again, I was really struck not only in that meal, but throughout the entire trip by the generosity of our hosts. They were so giving, just exposed us to so many different ingredients and dishes, and the food was delicious. And Verdicchio is so food friendly. I can say with complete confidence, having tested that now many, many times throughout the trip, it was brilliant having it with the local food.
So if you don't know what kind of bottle to put on your table, just go for a Verdicchio and you'll be fine.
That's right. I think it's a good choice.
We should become like the Verdicchio girls, you know, Larissa, because we love Verdicchio so much. We should like found a club, the Verdicchio girls around the world, spreading the Verdicchio gospel.
I like that. We just need to get some baseball caps and we'll be ready to go.
While I was saying offals, you were mentioning something like extremely precious and delicious, that is truffle.
That's right. So the very first day when we arrived, we went directly to the institute that's dedicated to kind of supporting the consortio, and it's focused on both wine as well as food. And we had kind of an initial grounding in Verdicchio, in the various different denominations of Le Marche, and then we had a masterclass on truffles. And we learned about all of the different varieties of truffles that are grown in Le Marche, that are indigenous to Le Marche. It's well over a dozen. And we're talking about both white as well as black truffles. And that evening, we had this incredibly indulgent and beautiful pasta, sort of like a rich egg pasta, an egg noodle type pasta, with these beautiful, luscious white truffles shaved over the pasta. And midway through the course, Julia, you may remember, the chef came around and shaved a second serving of truffles. It was just like the most luxurious over-the-top thing. And that was certainly not the only time we had truffles. Throughout the trip, we had truffles on a number of different occasions. Just intoxicating, beautiful, incredibly aromatic, really, really lovely. So the truffles were certainly a highlight for me of the trip.
Yeah, like a bite of heaven. Now my mouth is watering and I want to have a time machine to go back to have some sliced white truffle on my fresh pasta. What a dream.
You and me both.
Okay, let's go. Yeah, also truffle was a great, great experience. Do you have any producer that you recommend?
I do. I have several of them. As I was mentioning, you know, we kind of went methodically through different sub-regions within Le Marche. And so when I went back and I was looking over my notes, I had you know, 1-2 producers typically in every region that I really liked. And so if I kind of go chronologically through the trip, our first sort of guided formal tasting was in the right bank of Jesi. And there for me, the standout producer is Tavignano. And we tried 2 wines from Tavignano, both from the Misco parcel, or from a single parcel rather, in the Misco vineyard, which is a cru. They also use the Contrada system in Jesi. And so I thought their wines were beautiful, just, you know, super complex, really savory, gorgeous. They do not use oak for their wines. In Matelica, there were 2 producers that really stood out. By and large, the producers that we tasted in Matelica were pretty small. There was 1 new producer called Borgo Paglaneto. These guys are new. I think that they founded their estate in 2008. They make 100,000 bottles in total. They're one of those producers that is working to build a library. So they're holding back about 20% of their production every year of their cru wines. We had 6 wines from them. So we were able to do a vertical of one of their crus. We had a traditional method Verdicchio, just really, really beautiful wines. I could see how quality-minded they were, and I thought that they were producing something that was really lovely. And then the last wine that we had in that particular tasting came from a producer named Tenuta Grimaldi. And these guys are teeny tiny. They make only 20,000 bottles per year and only 1 wine. But I found them to be so charming and so delicious. Really, really liked those wines. Then the next tasting was the left bank of Jesi. There, again, there were 2 producers that for me really stood out. The first was Piebalta, founded in 2002, biodynamic since 2005, work with indigenous yeast, spontaneous fermentation. We tried 2 of their reservas. Again, just like beautiful, elegant, delicious. And then we had wines from a producer by the name of Venturi Roberto, also quite small, 80,000 bottles per year, indigenous yeast, spontaneous fermentation. We did something cool with these wines. We had the first wine, which was a 2013 Cru Superiore, and then we had the most recent wine, a 2019 Cru Riserva, that won Gambaro Rossi's Tre Bicchieri Awards. So that was really cool to kind of see these really special wines for the estate. In Lacrima di Moro di Alba, I loved the wines from Giusti. I just thought they were so characterful. They really tasted like fruit, not overly technical. My tasting notes for this producer just read yum in capital letters. Also really liked Mazzola. These were the last wines that we had in this particular tasting. Tiny producer, only 3 hectares of vineyards. They also work biodynamically. They have a very long fermentation. So a slow, long, cold fermentation, 40 days, prolonged aging. So all of the wines are held back for at least 3 years before they're released. Tiny production, only 25,000 bottles a year. I just found them to be really pure, true wines focused 100% on expressing the terroir. And then in Conero Rosso, I really enjoyed the wines from a producer named Fattoria Le Terrazze. Really close to the sea, tons of minerality. The winemaker is just a complete character.
He was like the Bob Dylan winemaker.
Yes, a fan of rock and roll. And I found the wines to be powerful, but still pretty. And, you know, just very classic, very traditional. Really, really liked those wines too.
Thank you so much for sharing.
So those were some of my faves.
Well, I guess that from the Verdicchio girls, that's all. Thank you so much for being here with me today, Larissa.
Thank you, Julia. It was my pleasure.
And hopefully we'll see each other soon in front of a bottle of Verdicchio.
Maybe with a plate of fresh pasta showered in tartufi.
I can't wait. Well, Larissa, thank you so much, and I'll see you soon.
Thank you, Julia.
Bye-bye.
Grazie for being with me today and listening to The Next Generation on the Italian Wine Podcast. Alla prossima. Cin cin!